Welcome to Retrospective Radio. With me, as is every month, is Don Owens from the Future Endeavors podcast, and we're here to talk about the latest happenings in WWE. Don, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. So, the TLC pay-per-view was last night, and tell us what you thought.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, last night, WWE definitely brought it. In my opinion, it was probably the third best pay-per-view of the entire year, following WrestleMania 26 and the Money in the Bank pay-per-views. This pay-per-view, pretty much, you know, with six matches on the card, really brought it from top to bottom. I mean, there wasn't very much of a dull moment to be had on this pay-per-view other than the silly Big Show Cody Rhodes segment that they threw in at the last minute. You know, overall, just super, super solid action. I mean, every match, I was pretty impressed that WWE gave every advertised match a gimmick to go with it. You know, when this pay-per-view debuted last year, not every match had a gimmick attached. You know, it pretty much revolved around the main event being a TLC, one chairs match, one tables match, and one ladder match, and pretty much the other matches on the cards were just whatever. They did a great job with this card, basically making every single match either a tables, a ladders, or a chairs match, and of course with the world title being the TLC match. So I for one, really like that. You know, I think if you're going to do a gimmick pay-per-view, let's go all out with it, and that's what they did, and hat was definitely off to them last night. Pay-per-view kicked off in a really good fashion, which was the triple threat ladder match for the Intercontinental title. You had Dolph Ziggler defending against Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger. This match was a great way to start it off. My only beef with this one was I wish they would have given them a little bit more time. This match only went about 9-10 minutes, and you know, felt a little bit rushed at points. But I mean, once again, those three guys, they really brought it. Very high, you know, big action. Kofi, of course, you know, amazing, doing some really cool moves with the ladder, swinging through the rungs, and, you know, just really doing some cool stuff there. And the finish, I had to give him props to, because, I mean, we've been seeing ladder matches now for many, many years, and it's always pretty much the same thing in the end of a ladder match. The ending of this one was very interesting. And with that, basically, Kofi and Jack Swagger were on top of the ladder, and they were fighting over the belt, and they both ended up unhooking it at the same time, and the belt actually dropped. And when it hit the mat, Dolph Ziggler ran across the mat and snatched it up and basically was declared the winner just by being the one to actually have his hands on the belt after it was unhooked. So I thought that was a pretty interesting way to finish it out. It definitely went with the heel character that Dolph is, and made it to be, you know, that this sneaky little guy made it through again. Even though he wasn't the one to unhook it, I love that he recognized the fact that it hit the mat, darted across, grabbed it, and was able to retain the Intercontinental title. So, you know, definitely a very good match and a great way to start the show.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, creative finish. I guess some people kind of thought it was a little screwy, but, you know, it's fine for a first match in the show, continuing the story, I guess. Yeah, for me, though, I don't know, having every match be a... a ladder or tables or whatever match, for me, it seems like almost like a little too much for me. I mean, just, you know, especially like, I think the Divas tables match would have stood out more, maybe, you know, obviously you saw the show, I didn't, but would have stood out more if it had happened in the Royal Rumble show without, you know, there being a bunch of other stipulation matches. It feels like a couple of them just made it, like, I kind of feel the same way about Extreme Rules, is where, like, it's just, you know, kind of like almost like too much of a good thing in the way. And, you know, for me, wrestling is a lot of the benefit of it is, like, kind of, you know, creating memories. And when you, when you have, you know, try to make everything, you know, special or different or exciting, it just kind of muddles it together a little bit. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, and a lot of people share that sentiment. I, for one, am just not one of them. It's kind of like a lot of, you know, on a side note, just, you know, the reaction that a lot of people get for, you know, a big action movie, let's say, you know, where it's nonstop action for 2 hours, and people are like, whoa, it was just too much bang-bang for me for 2 hours, and I'm the one sitting there going, man, that was awesome. That was 2 hours of just pure adrenaline excitement. And, you know, and that's how I feel about a pay-per-view like this. I mean, I love... You know, they don't do these gimmick matches very often anymore now that they have pay-per-views that center around them. And, you know, I just think, you know, it would have maybe been overkill if it was a ladders pay-per-view and every single match was a ladder match, you know, but they did a good job on making it to where if it was a ladder match, they were strictly using ladders. You didn't really get tables pulled out. You weren't using chairs. It was centered around the ladder. And in the chairs matches, it was centered around a chair. And in the tables match, it was just a table. So you didn't get too many things mixed up to where it was like, oh, this is just like the other match I just saw, you know, and they were all spread out, you know, pretty well as far as where they were placed on the card too. So there wasn't really anything of the same back to back. So, you know, but I know a lot of people think, you know, overkill, too much of a good thing. But, you know, I, for one, I loved it. I just felt if you're going to do a gimmick pay-per-view, let's do it all the way. And, you know, it definitely worked because, I mean, I can tell you the general reaction to last night was one of the best pay-per-views of the year. And everybody loved it last night. So, I mean, it definitely did its job.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, you make a good point.
So then speaking of the Divas stuff, that was actually the second match of the night, which was the Divas tag team tables match, the first ever. So that was pretty cool. I actually saw a tweet from Lita on Twitter saying that she was a little bit jealous of not getting to be involved in a match like that and that she was looking forward to watching the playback. And once again, I got to tell you, I mean, this hands down, probably Diva match of the year, probably Diva match of the last couple years. Most of the time blow off these Diva matches. You know, when we talk about the pay-per-views, we're kind of always like, it was what it was, you know, nothing too special. Last night, though, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, it was the first Divas match that probably went past 10 minutes in the last couple years. And, you know, all four girls truly shined last night. And I can say without a doubt, much props to all four of them, Michelle McCool, Layla, Natalia, Beth Phoenix. They all did their job. They all did it well. There was some crazy spots in there. There was a big spot in there where Beth Phoenix actually fell out of the ring backwards through the ropes and literally fell on her head upside down. And it was a pretty crazy moment. I mean, I tweeted that she was dead because, I mean, I truly believe she was dead at that moment because the way she hit, I didn't see how she was going to get up from that. I mean, her body completely folded like an accordion. And, you know, seeing the referee run over, and it was a pretty scary moment, honestly. But got to give Beth, you know, Beth props. She got back up. She got back into the match. And I don't know how she did it. I mean, they replayed it a couple different times, and especially in the slow motion version. I mean, when she fell, I mean, you know, I'm talking about from the ring to the floor on your head and just having your body fold up, you know, the neck snapping. And I don't know how her weight was able to support that. But once again, big props to her for sucking it up, jumping back into it. This match ended in a pretty weird way. It was actually a botch, but it ended up making, I felt, it made the match end on a better note. In the end, basically, the table was set up in the ring. Lay Cool actually put Natalia up on the top rope, and they were going to double suplex her through the table. And Natalia ended up pushing them off of her, so then Michelle McCool and Layla actually fell on top of the table, and the table was supposed to break. But the table did not break. It just kind of bent a little bit. So at that point, everybody was kind of like, ooh, you know, like that wasn't what was supposed to happen. But, you know, Natalia being smart enough to improvise, she ended up jumping off the top rope and splashing them, which then, of course, broke them through the table. And I felt, obviously, that the splash finish was a lot better than her just pushing them off the top rope and having them kind of fall backwards through the table. So in a good way, it was good that the table didn't break the way that they had originally planned, you know. And but overall, just a really good, solid match. And like I said, everybody looked good, and I was definitely proud of the Divas division for once last night.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of nice between this and, of course, the Mickey James Tara cage match on Impact a few weeks ago. That, you know, women's wrestling is at least getting a little bit more play, you know, toward the end of this year, and hopefully, you know, I mean, you know, when they have women there, you know, who can really wrestle and, you know, give them a little bit of time and have exciting matches, I mean, I think it's a great thing. I think, you know, I enjoy good women's wrestling, and, you know, it's nice to see it. But, you know, obviously for a long time, it's been much more an emphasis on the looks rather than the ability. And, you know, the matches hardly get any time. And a lot of them, quite frankly, are just, you know, trying to get way too many things in, you know, during the time they do have. So it's, you know, nice to, give them a little bit of time, give them something to do, and maybe TNA and WWE, at least as far as the women go, maybe there's a little bit of a competition there to try to feature them and outdo each other a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I hear you. The Mickie James Tara stuff has been great on Impact, one of the highlights of their programming in the last several weeks. And so yeah, I mean, it's good to see the Divas step up. I'm excited. Tonight on Raw, seeing Melina officially complete her heel turn. She won a number one contenders triple threat match tonight. Natalya went to shake her hand, and Melina slapped her across the face. So we'll definitely be getting that Melina and Natalya feud, which I think will be great. I mean, when Melina's been a little on and off the last several months, ever since her return at SummerSlam, honestly. And but I think if she focuses and she's got her mind right, I think Melina is hands down one of the best divas on the roster. So I think her and Natalya can actually do something pretty special together. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, we'll see.
So that was the end of that one, and then basically we got an impromptu match that was not announced. They just kind of added it on the pay-per-view. This one did not have a stipulation, so this is where the stipulation rule fell through for you. And this was actually a tag team title match that was added. The WWE Tag Team Championships, Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov defended the titles in a rematch against Nexus, Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater. This was just kind of a, once again, like I said, a little throwaway match. It just kind of built onto the card. I was a little shocked that they actually added this match to the card, just due to the fact that the original plan was obviously to have Alberto Del Rio and Rey Mysterio go have a chairs match, and that match ended up getting scrapped, and they got added into the main event, which turned into a fatal four-way. From what everything I read said was due to time constraints and that they wanted to allow matches to have more time and not feel rushed. And then they did that and then ended up, putting in this throwaway tag team match. And then they ran a really long 10-minute throwaway segment with Big Show and Cody Rhodes. That was really boring and really had no right to be on a pay-per-view. So that kind of flustered me a little bit as far as what they were thinking, as far as, making the fatal four-way and taking away another match on the card due to time. And then putting on stuff like this, I much rather would have had, Daniel Bryan defending the U.S. title in some kind of way, and I think that would have worked out better. But in any case, we got a tag team title match. This match, obviously the low light of the pay-per-view. I mean, everybody did their job. They did what they could do. It was kept pretty short. And basically the end came as Michael McGillicuddy ran into the ring and tripped up Santino. And then the referee turned around and saw him do it, so he disqualified Nexus. So Santino and Kozlov retained the tag team titles. And then, of course, the Nexus beatdown ensued, where they beat down Santino and Kozlov. Wade Barrett walked out with a chair and basically nailed down Santino and Kozlov with the chair, kind of sending a message, of course, to Cena for their chairs match later in the night. So that was your tag team title match.
Yeah. Well, I think a couple points. One, yeah, I obviously in a perfect world you would much rather have a Daniel Bryan title match than this match. I mean, I kind of think maybe this and the Cody Rhodes segment were meant to be buffers in between the in between the other matches to kind of give the crowd a little bit of breathing room and all and that sort of thing. And obviously this match was shorter than a Rey Mysterio Alberto Rio chairs match would have been. And I imagine, well, certainly adding Mysterio and Alberto improved the quality of that TLC match quite a bit. So I can, at least from WWE's point of view, I can kind of see, why those moves somewhat made sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that was basically your bonus match, and then that led into definitely hands down 150% match of the night, probably top five of the entire year, and I'm talking about the ladder match for the number one contendership, John Morrison taking on Sheamus, and this match, man, just had me floored, had me on my edge of my seat from beginning to end. I felt that these two last night officially arrived, if I can say that. I mean, obviously Sheamus is already a two-time former champion, but I felt that last night was almost like a defining moment in his career, where he just came off looking like a star, and of course John Morrison looking like an even bigger rising star. This match, you know, maybe I think after seeing this, I think it made sense why the opening Triple Threat Intercontinental ladder match was kept to be a little bit shorter and ended the way it did, was because they knew that this was coming. And, you know, this match was just on point from beginning to end. Great action from both guys. The match started with John Morrison really having the upper hand, using his quickness, using the high-flying moves, and doing some really cool stuff with the ladder. And then basically Sheamus, of course, getting the upper hand at the, you know, after about the five-minute mark or so, and then really, you know, using the ladder to work on Morrison's legs, really taking away the high-flying maneuvers from Morrison, you know. And there was some couple spots in this match that were just insane. I mean, the first big spot was Morrison had the ladder over in the corner of the ring, and he climbed the top rope and basically jumped over the top of the ladder and did a corkscrew plancha onto Sheamus, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful move. And, you know, just once again, just showing that awesome athleticism. There was another huge spot later in the match that had the Sheamus had set up a ladder at one point that laid out from the ring to, like, the announce table, so it was laying straight across. And there were several points in the match where, you know, Morrison was trying to suplex Sheamus onto it, and Sheamus was trying to throw Morrison onto it. Nothing was really happening. And then at one point in the match, they were both on top of the ladder in the ring, and they were fighting so hard on it that the ladder tipped over, and they fell from the ring out to the floor, and Sheamus came crashing on top of that ladder that was laying flat down, and the ladder actually snapped in half. And that was just another huge holy shit type moment. That was just awesome. And at this point, it seemed like Morrison had it in the bag. He got up, set up the ladder, was getting up to the top to grab the contract, and kind of give it up to Sheamus after that huge fall through the ladder, cracking it in half. The guy got up, he crawled back in the ring, and started to shake the ladder that Morrison was on. And the ending was a great, great ending to a ladder match. Basically, he went to tip the ladder backwards, and when the ladder tipped backwards, Morrison stuck his foot out, was able to catch his balance on the ropes, push himself off the ropes with the ladder, and then Shining Wizard, you know, kicked Sheamus to the face, taking him out, and then he climbed the ladder and grabbed the contract to win the number one contendership. So John Morrison is your number one contender for the WWE Championship, which will go on to Royal Rumble to fight The Miz for the belt. And, yeah, that whole ending was just great. I mean, seeing the ladder about to tip, Morrison catching it with his foot, shooting himself back up forward on the ladder, and then kicking Morrison in the head. Like I said, man, just this match from top to bottom, it was a 5-star out of 5-star match. It told a great story. Morrison did an awesome job selling the injured legs after, you know, Sheamus did his thing. Sheamus took, you know, a bigger bump than I thought he ever would. And both guys just really shined at the end of this. And I am just super excited to see this match, super proud of this match, and definitely one of the top best ladder matches of all time.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. And yeah, it sounded, you know, like you were talking about, it's kind of, I think the difference between it and a lot of ladder matches is, you know, the story and the psychology and, you know, building to, you know, Morrison with the knee injury and the limitations there. That's always, I think, what separates the, you know, fun but ultimately forgettable ladder matches, where it's, you know, kind of a bunch of stunts and a bunch of, you know, people going through things and what have you. And certainly you had, you know, you had that here, but you also had, you know, the story. And I think, you know, also, you know, building Morrison to be the number one contender, you know, that obviously that story is important, and, you know, leading to the, I think they can tell a really good story with him and Miz if they try to, given the history that they have together, you know, for the next pay-per-view. And obviously this is the first step toward that. So yeah, it should be interesting. I'm not, John Morrison has not impressed me in a lot of ways over the years. I know you're a big fan. A lot of people are big fans, and yeah, that's fine. I mean, I recognize his athletic gifts. It's the other things that I don't think he's very strong in, but he certainly has an opportunity now, and you know, and maybe he'll develop that and more, and you know, will become the complete package and will become the guy that, you know, everyone thinks and hopes that he will be. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it was cool. I was seeing some other tweets last night. I mean, I saw one with Kevin Sullivan, you know, who wrote the WWE book that you actually interviewed on your show. And he actually tweeted last night when Morrison won that he remembered seeing him back on Tough Enough, you know, live, you know, training, and he said to, you know, to somebody backstage, you know, this guy's a future star. And he, you know, and then he called it all the way back in the Tough Enough days when this guy was just a kid training, you know, and then seeing Jim Ross, you know, blog about John Morrison saying that his star has arrived. And I mean, it just, and then today, just reading about the general backstage reaction about everybody pretty much giving those two guys a standing ovation backstage, and that the praise that came from Vince and everybody about that match. I mean, it was just really cool to see, you know, especially for myself, just being such a big Morrison fan that I've been pulling for this guy for years when nobody was really paying attention to him. And now seeing him finally kind of get his due, you know, and I'm just super stoked. I mean, the fact that he's going to main event a pay-per-view for the title is you know, gigantic. And I mean, last night it was just great to see all the, you know, crowd reactions from everybody, and to see all the tweets of everybody saying, you know, that Morrison had arrived. And, you know, if you weren't a believer before, how can you not be after seeing this match? And he just, you know, he definitely pulled it off. And I mean, much props to him and Sheamus as well. So awesome match.
Before we get to the next match, I'm just wondering, do you think, kind of based on what happened on Raw tonight, do you think that they're going to slide Orton into the match and make it a three-way?
It's a very good question. I think they easily could if they feel that it's not going to be enough of a buy just based on Morrison and Miz, but I hope they don't. You know, I think, you know, I'm going to go with no at this point. I'm going to hope that they're going to leave it be, let it be Miz and Morrison, unless that they have a bigger plan for the fact of, you know, I don't know. I know on Future Endeavors, Man After Dark thinks that one of the main events at WrestleMania is going to actually be Morrison and Miz. And, you know, and if they truly might be thinking that route, then maybe they do want to save that for Mania, and they might insert, you know, Orton just to kind of make it to where you have to wait for that big one-on-one between those two. You know, but you know, I hope they leave it be. You know, Morrison earned it. He won it fair and square. You know, so I hope they leave it. You know, there's definitely enough history and backstory between these two to really, you know, set up a great rivalry and to set up a great story. I mean, the Royal Rumble's, you know, like 6 weeks away, so we have definitely probably one of the biggest gaps in pay-per-views that we've had in a long time to really build up, you know, a card and a story and a rivalry here. So I'm hoping they leave it one-on-one.
Yeah, I agree.
So after this, we jumped in, speaking of the WWE title, we jumped into the WWE Championship match. This was a tables match with The Miz defending against Randy Orton. And another good match, very solid match. I thought Miz definitely brought it. He definitely, you know, showed championship material. He hung with Orton really bell to bell. And, you know, it was a very solid match for being a tables match. And the first ending to the match, because there was a couple, I really liked, and I wish they would have actually left it alone to be the sole ending, because I thought it fit Miz's character very, very well. And basically what had happened was is the ref ended up getting bumped, and he got knocked out of the ring. And, of course, you know, he was knocked out, and he couldn't see what was going on. So Alex Riley comes into the match to try to jump Orton, and Orton ends up powerbombing Riley through the table. So after he powerbombs him through the table, The Miz comes up behind Orton, and he hits him with the skull-crushing finale. At this point, The Miz realizes that the ref's knocked out. He's nowhere to be seen. He ends up dragging Alex Riley out of the ring and then dragging Randy Orton's body on top of the broken table. And then jumps out of the ring and picks up the ref and shows the ref that Orton is through the table. The ref rings the bell, and The Miz retains the title. So at this point, I'm laughing my ass off, and I'm thinking that's a very innovative way to end the match. It brought me back to a memory of, like, Eddie Guerrero-type style. You know, I mean, it was just it was a really cool little cheating kind of way, you know, for him to retain, was that, you know, he made it look like he had gone through the table, but he hadn't. And as he was walking up the ramp getting ready to leave, they were showing the replay of the match. And, of course, they pan back to the live shot. The referee is watching the Titantron and sees what had happened and says, no, I'm voiding it. You know, this match is going to continue. So then the match started back up, and it really didn't matter. I mean, it was over again within about 20 seconds. And, you know, Miz jumps back into the ring. Randy Orton jumps up on the ring apron. And Alex Riley ends up actually bumping the ropes and hitting Randy Orton, which then Orton lost his balance, fell backwards, and crashed through a table. and The Miz won that way. So basically, The Miz didn't even push him through the table, but he somehow retained the title by that because Orton went through the table physically once again. So, like I said, I didn't think the second ending was all that great. I wish they would have left it with the first one because I thought the first one was very sneaky and definitely fit Miz's character super well. So another good match with definitely an interesting ending to it.
Yeah, the only thing about the first finish is it reminds me of the, I think it was Kevin Nash and Sid powerbomb match where Nash didn't even have to powerbomb Sid to win the match. I think it was Starrcade 99 maybe. I don't know. I don't like the, like, pretty much, like, it's always, like, agreed in wrestling that the referee has to actually see, like either have to, you know, actually count the pinfall or actually, like, see something in order to, you know, for it to count, sort of. So the idea that the referee would just assume that he had powerbound him through the table, you know, I mean, I guess they did enough where, you know, obviously he dragged him and he was on top of the table where, you know, you can kind of buy it. But I don't know. The it sort of goes against, like, you know, established wrestling protocol, so to speak.
Right.
But then also going to replay also goes against established wrestling protocol either as well.
Exactly.
So you
they know it's the replay. So.
Yeah. So there's, you know, kind of you no one wins in that. But, you know, I guess they were trying to be different. And, yeah, I mean, I do certainly Miz should not have won clean. You know, obviously he's, you know, he's a chicken and he should, you know, at least win by cheating. But I don't know, I think with Alex Riley interfering so liberally, you could have done something where, you know, they massively cheat and, you know, put Orton through a table somehow a little bit more, you know, a little bit more straight than they played it. But, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter that much in the end.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like I said, I mean, not the greatest match, but definitely very, very entertaining and definitely a lot better than the Randy Orton Wade Barrett matches we've been getting the last couple of pay-per-views. So it was a nice change of pace there.
Yeah.
So then that led us into our second to last match, which was where the controversy came into play. And I know me and you were going back and forth about this yesterday. I was pretty pissed about it. It was the fact that the next match was the world title match, which was the Fatal 4-Way for the TLC match for the world title. And, you know, not just myself, but a lot of people were very taken back by the fact that this was not the main event. You know, honestly, truly feel 110% that the title, you know, regardless of where its prestige level lies at this point, is your main focus in the company. The biggest thing should be to be the champion. And for me, you have a pay-per-view titled TLC, and you only have one TLC match on the card, and then it's not your main event. And I just didn't get it. It just made no sense. I truly did feel that it was almost a slap in the face to champions, current champions, former champions, whatever, that they got pushed aside to not be the main event for John Cena and Wade Barrett to have a chairs match. You know, I don't feel that their personal rivalry was worth any more than, you know, a world title match, especially a world title TLC match on a TLC pay-per-view. You know, last year when this pay-per-view debuted, the main event was the TLC match. And it makes no sense that, and that was for the tag team titles. So, you know, but the fact of the matter was that it was the TLC match that ended the show. And they had amped up this match so much by adding Alberto and Rey into the match and making it a big Fatal 4-Way. And then a lot of people were thinking, too, well, because this match is on now, that means the heel's going to win and all this stuff. But that wasn't the case, as Edge became a 10-time world champion by winning this match. So there was no reason why this match wouldn't have gone on last, you know, and with the big celebration of, you know, Edge winning his 10th title reign. So digressing a little bit just about its placement, I know I'm not alone in this. I've been talking to people from yesterday to today and just still seeing people writing the reviews on the show. I've been reading a lot of reviews of what people thought, and I haven't read one yet. I didn't feel that was the wrong decision to make. So, but the match itself, I got to say, second best match of the night, hands down. This definitely, you know, only was trailed behind the John Morrison-Sheamus match. And, of course, how can you blame it? I mean, you got four, you know, great guys. You got Edge, you got Kane, Rey Mysterio, and Alberto Del Rio going in this match with use of all tables, ladders, and chairs. And it was just a really solid match. A lot of great action, back-and-forth action. some big spots. There was a real big spot with Kane on the table on the floor and Edge in the ring on top of the ladder and actually jumping from the top of the ladder onto the floor on top of Kane, splashing him through the table. That was a great spot. There was another huge spot with Alberto. It looked like Alberto was going to win the title at one point, and then Ray kicked the ladder and tipped it over, and Alberto fell from the ring all the way to through two tables on the floor, and I was very impressed that he took a bump like that. Pretty much everybody took some pretty crazy bumps except for Kane, and my only goal in this match was to not have Kane walk out as the world champion anymore, because I am through and through with his title reign. And, I hope we don't get Edge and Kane for the umpteenth time at the Royal Rumble. I have a feeling we might get it just because, obviously, he's got his rematch clause that we all love so much. But we'll see where that goes from there. But, yeah, just a really great match. Edge, climbing the ladder, grabbing the belt at the end, and becoming a 10-time champ. So that's huge right there. Got to give props to Edge. I mean, won his first title in 2006, and... 4 years later, he's a 10-time champ, and that's pretty big, man. That's pretty, pretty big. So a great match.
Yeah, it's a lot of times to be champion in 4 years, which speaks to an issue that I harp on a lot about lots of title changes and all that stuff. But we've heard that before, so we won't get into that. But I pretty much agree with you that probably the TLC match should have been the main event, especially when you're talking about, the main event being a chairs match, which is kind of a silly stipulation.
Very silly stipulation.
On the other hand, the Barrett-Cena feud has been going on for, 7 months, and it's like it was pretty clearly the end of, that program and... and a pretty huge thing overall, even if the setup for it was incredibly weak, and even if that storyline has had some pacing issues. So I'm willing to at least halfway defend that, I can see it being the main event, and I think, the idea that it's an insult to to the other guys, I think that's a little much. But I will agree, that in a perfect world, probably the fact that the TLC match was not the main event is more silly to me than the idea that one of the title matches was not the main event. So,
especially since the fact too that Edge did win the belt and you got a pretty big babyface winning his 10th title. I think that would have been a great closeout to the show. I would have understood his placement a little bit more if, Alberto won the title, or Kane retained, in some kind of crazy way, then I would understand a little bit. But WWE usually is pretty good in always making the big title change in the night to send people home happy. And that's why I was a little, shocked in the way that they, placed this one out,
Yeah, I can understand that too. I mean, in the end, I mean, I don't think it's not a big deal. But I do think, there is a bigger issue of treating your titles with some, treating your titles with some value and that whole deal, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I'm still just disappointed at his placement.
Fair enough.
Yes. So, but yeah, another great match. You should definitely check that one out when you get a chance.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one too.
Definitely ranks up there. I was pulling for Alberto to win the title last night. I had originally predicted that Edge was going to win the belt, and then once they made it a fatal four-way, I felt there was a bigger picture behind this here, and I thought that they were going to give the belt to Alberto and then lead into an Edge and Del Rio feud moving forward. So I was a little disappointed that Del Rio didn't win it. I'm really, really liking this guy, and but like I said, big congratulations to Edge on his 10th win there. And then just on the other side, just another thing that kind of shocked me about his placement is that, if you're familiar with WWE pay-per-views like I am, they never, ever do their two championship matches back-to-back. They never, ever do. they'll always do one, and then they'll usually have the filler match in between, and then, you know, the last one, the other title match. You know, so that was the other thing that really shocked me, because they did the WWE title and then with the world title right behind it. So they did both title matches back to back. And that was another shocker to me, just because they'd never, ever do that on pay-per-view. So that was another weird way of, you know, what I thought about their positioning of the matches last night.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that led into, I guess, what you would call your main event of the night, which was the chairs match, John Cena versus Wade Barrett. And give you a little backstory on this one. Earlier in the pay-per-view, it showed Wade Barrett and Husky Harris walking backstage and discussing something. And they ended up walking into the Nexus dressing room. And when they walked in, you had Justin Gabriel, Heath Slater, and Michael McGillicuddy all laid out on the floor, basically grunting and hurting, you know, like they had obviously been jumped and beat up. So you already know at that point, okay, Cena's already got his hands on them, you know, since he's been so adamant that he's going to take the whole team out one by one, which once again kind of, you know, peeved me a little bit that, you know, Cena was able to go into the Nexus locker room and take out three of those guys by himself, especially with the way that they had it, the way that they had it looking when they walked into the locker room. I mean, you had Husky Harris, Michael McGillicuddy, like, on the floor with the, chair around his neck, you know, hurting like that. And then you had Justin Gabriel on the floor with the chair on his arm, like he was all bent, you know, like Cena had put the chair on his arm and stomped on it. And then, he slid it over on the side with his leg cranked back with a chair stuck on his leg. You know, so it wasn't just a beat down. It was like Cena had basically wrapped chairs around all of them and broke bones and, you know, done a whole big number on them. So, it's one of those things that was like, okay, so then what, you know, Wade tells Husky, you know, let's stick together, let's make sure, you know, Cena's not around, blah, blah, blah. Right before the match started, they're walking through the hallway and are about to go out to ringside, and a chair from nowhere swings around the corner and whacks Husky Harris in the face. And then when Wade Barrett bows down to see if Husky's okay, John Cena pops up and is basically like, hey, how's it going? I'll see you out there, you know, with the chair in his arm. And, and then basically the match, you know, went to begin. It was a pretty crazy chair shot, especially since they banned chair shots to the head. And that was definitely an unprotected shot. That was Husky just walking down the hallway and a chair swinging around the corner and smacking him in the face. So at this point, basically the entire Nexus team has been taken out but Wade Barrett. And then we jump straight into the match, which the match was so-so. I would say besides the tag team championship match that was just kind of thrown on the card at the last minute, this was definitely the least favorite match of the night. This was definitely the worst match of the night. Not saying that it was a horrible match, but compared to how awesome everything else was, this was kind of a letdown, especially to be the main event on the pay-per-view, and this also went towards, you know, their lineup of how they positioned this. This should not have been the last match of the night. This shouldn't have been how they closed out the show, because I know not very many people were happy with this match. Like I said, there was some good action. There were some good spots. There was a pretty good spot that happened with they were fighting up on the ramp, and John Cena actually went in the back and then pulled out one of those real nice, comfortable kind of office chairs, and he put Wade Barrett in the chair and then pushed Wade Barrett down the ramp, down the entrance ramp on the chair, and there were steel steps set up at the end of the ramp, and he ended up smashing straight into it. That was a pretty cool little bump. Obviously a lot of chair shots, you know, but nothing too crazy, just a lot on the back and the stomach. And, but I thought the ending was really good. The ending to the match, John Cena ended up lining up 8 chairs in the ring. He put, you know, 4 across and then 4 across on the other side of them. So there was 8 of them stacked together, and picked up Wade Barrett and ended up giving him the attitude adjustment on top of all 8 chairs. And that was a pretty cool ending. Ended up, you know, got the pin, 1-2-3 at that point. Won the match, and then continued to grab Wade Barrett, hit him with the chair some more. He took him down to the bottom of the stage. You probably saw, obviously, they replayed it 50 million times on Raw tonight, but he ended up laying Barrett out. He put a pallet over the top of him, and then there was a bunch of chairs hanging from the ceiling as part of the stage. And Cena, you know, yanked the bottom one, and about, you know, 25 chairs came crashing down from the ceiling on top of the pallet that Wade Barrett was under, and that was how the pay-per-view ended. you know, that whole thing with the chairs had me kind of a couple different reactions. I mean, for one, on TV, you know, for a TV angle of it, it looked pretty cool. But from a realistic point, it was kind of stupid just due to the fact that he put a big metal pallet on top of them to protect them and then dropped all those chairs, which I don't care if there was 100 chairs that dropped from the ceiling that didn't do a single thing to hurt Wade Barrett. So it was kind of pointless in that fact for somebody that wanted to hurt him so bad. Dropping all those chairs on a pallet didn't really do anything to harm Wade Barrett. You know, it would have been pretty cool to see if he hadn't protected him and dropped all those chairs on top of him. You know, interesting ending to the pay-per-view. But like I said, that was the downfall of it. Not a horrible match by any means, but like I said, compared to how much awesomeness we had earlier in the night, that was a letdown for that to be the main event. But overall, like I said, probably third best pay-per-view of the year. TLC was pretty off the hook.
Yeah, the other thing, though, probably if John Cena hadn't have put the pallet on top of him, WWE would have had its second murder on television in 2 weeks. So, you know, you don't want that to, you know, become a habit or anything. You know, obviously this appears to pretty much be the end of the Cena Nexus deal. I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, kind of hard to move beyond that. So, you know, it's definitely been an up and down storyline. Kind of, you know, what are your thoughts overall?
I haven't liked the storyline at all, honestly. You know, I mean, there's so much that should have been done that wasn't done. You know, I mean, we've talked before on your show, and you know how much I wanted to see Cena in the Nexus shirt, and that never really truly happened. You know, and then it's like to have you know, he should have came out to the Nexus music, had the Nexus attire on. You know, even when he was fired, it was just such a joke for him to pop up in the crowd in his wrestling gear, in his purple shirt, in his, you know, jorts, in, you know, with knee pads on. I mean, come on. It was just too much. It was too over the top. You know, the least they could have done was had Cena wear normal clothes and kind of, you know, attacking these guys out back or, you know, doing something a little bit crazier. I think they should have had Cena off TV for a couple of weeks and then had him kind of start coming through the crowd and doing things. You know, they didn't give us any time without him. You know, for somebody that was fired, he was allowed to get backstage, he was allowed to get on the Titantron, he was allowed to get his music played, and he wore his wrestling gear everywhere he went. And that was just pretty lame. And, you know, I still, in my heart of hearts, believe that the ultimate story to this would have been, you know, back at SummerSlam, you know, having John Cena turn on WWE and be the mastermind behind the group and be the leader and turn heel and have that ultimate big heel turn. And, you know, I think Nexus would be the biggest thing ever right now at this point, you know, a la, you know, NWO. You know, it just, you know, they could have just done so much more with the storyline. And I don't like how it panned out in the end. And I have a hard time believing even at this point that this feud is truly over. I think, it's not over. I think that, you know, the Nexus might be off TV for a couple of weeks, and I think they're going to come back, and they're going to pretty much pick right up where they left off and, you know, basically start the feud right back up. You know, I don't think this feud is going to be over until WrestleMania. I think you're going to get Cena and Barrett again at WrestleMania, probably maybe with the, you know, same type of stipulation that they had, you know, at Hell in a Cell with the, you know, group either disbanding or Cena, you know, maybe joining them again. I don't know what they could do with it, but I definitely don't see this feud ultimately ending until, you know, WrestleMania time or so.
Yeah, I guess you could build heat for it, like if they gang up on Cena and eliminate him from the Royal Rumble or something, and then, you know, then now he's mad at him again. You know, I don't know if that would carry another couple months, but I guess I could see that. I guess there's possibilities there, although I'm pretty ready for it to end. I totally agree.
I want it to be over too, as much as you do, but
yeah.
I have a hard time feeling that this is the end of it. I can't see, if there's a big bad group they're supposed to be, I don't see Wade Barrett just being like, you know what, he beat us, let's move on, do something different. You know, I don't think that's the end of Nexus. I think they'll be back, and I just see them obviously picking back up where they left off to be like, you can't pick us off one by one, we're back and we're going to take you out again, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of possible directions for Cena. I mean, that's possible. Maybe doing Orton again is possible. Maybe Undertaker, although Undertaker probably has to go through Kane before he would move on to something else, and he probably isn't going to be back in time to to do Kane and then Cena. So there's probably a couple different things they could do, but that's definitely one of them. For me, obviously the very first angle, the Nexus beatdown of Cena and the debut essentially that was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some pretty strong moments. I mean, I thought Cena forming the Team WWE to combat Nexus at SummerSlam was good. I thought that SummerSlam match was actually really fun, although I thought the ending was the wrong ending. Cena basically no-selling a DDT on the concrete on the floor and then coming back a minute later and beating I forget who the other heel he beat, but he beat one of the next members, and then he beat Barrett clean. But that yeah, didn't I you know that, but still the match overall was pretty fun, and I was into that storyline for the most part. But yeah, the last few months of it, I mean, they basically went through 3 months of story in, or I'm sorry, they went through a year's worth of story, or at least 9 months worth of story in 3 months. They didn't take Cena off TV at all after he was supposedly fired. And you can talk all you want to about whether WWE is really obligated to fulfill that stipulation or not, but I mean, it certainly would have been a much more effective story to have him come back if he had been gone for at least a little while. And it really did make that story significantly worse, and make it more annoying when he cut that great retirement promo that he was leaving, and it was I thought he did a really good job with it, and then kind of made him look silly when he came, like he's being a phony, he had no intention of leaving when he did that, which I think kind of only adds to the perception that that he's kind of a phony. So it was definitely. Definitely, there were three or four really, really strong elements to that storyline, but overall, I think it has to be classified as a disappointment. And really, I think that's kind of the story of WWE in some respects in 2010. I mean, if you look at the major stories that they had, kind of from the Bret Vince McMahon story, and a couple others, you really had like a lot of hit or miss. You had some really memorable stuff, but sustaining a lot of that from week to week standpoint, they had a really tough time with that.
I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, basically, I love the Nexus storyline as its own thing, and I love the way it began, and I love the way that it rolled on for months. My only beef with it is the wrap up, is this ending part with John Cena. I just think the ball was dropped with Cena, from the heel turn all the way to the firing angle, to his return. I just, like you said, I mean, he made such a great promo that truly, made me believe almost as a fan that he was gone and he was taking off. And he said, so wholeheartedly that this allows him to have more time with his family, and he's going to go celebrate the holidays and Thanksgiving and, everything with his family and have that time and, goodbye everyone. And then it's just like, and then like a day later he's tweeting about, I bought my ticket to Raw, and I'll be there, and then all of a sudden here he is. And it just, and I just, like you said, I mean, it's like we all knew he wasn't truly fired, but it's like, let's have some kind of believability in this angle, let's have him off TV, even if it was just for 2 weeks. Let's make it be like, okay, boom, he's gone. I mean, they went through the hassle of actually removing him from the entrance video on Raw. It's like, okay, so he's gone from there. Let's make it believable, that he's gone. And then when he came back, he truly should not have been in his wrestling gear. I'm sorry, I find it hard to believe that he bought a ticket to the event and he came and showed up in his purple shirt with his wristbands on, with his knee pads on, and it's just like, come on already,
Well, those are the clothes that he has, so
I guess. He's got 20 purple shirts in his closet with the jean shorts.
Yeah, he's
and even
like,
if he had to wear that outfit, he didn't have to wear the knee pads. Come on.
Well,
or the
yeah.
wristband.
He
could have went without some of it.
Well, he's like a cartoon character. He's always wearing the same thing every time. He doesn't have any different outfits. So, what can you do?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, the way that he's able to, you know, basically be impervious to pain and, you know, beat everybody up, it's kind of like cartoon characters, so it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It does make sense if you put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, you know, I think that's, you know, like I said, you know, kind of hit or miss in a lot of ways, but, you know, obviously we're in December and we're close to Christmas, and that means, you know, kind of talking about some of what, you know, reminiscing about the year to come. And, you know, when you look back at 2010, let's say, you know, a few years into the future, what do you think you're going to remember about pro wrestling in 2010?
Well, I mean, speaking of Nexus, I mean, definitely it would be Nexus. I think Nexus is the biggest thing this year, hands down. You know, I'll never forget, you know, that first night of you know, the 8 rookies from NXT Season 1, you know, coming out together from through the crowd and jumping the barricade and beating up John Cena. And, you know, Justin Roberts getting choked out with his tie by Daniel Bryan. And, you know, that whole thing will stick in my mind forever. I think that'll be a highlight, you know, real moment for the rest of our lives. And so, I mean, that definitely is probably my biggest memory of 2010. You know, there's so many things. I mean, you know, a whole WrestleMania 26 is going to have that soft spot in my heart just because I was there. You know, obviously Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, just the, you know, most amazing match of the year. Shawn Michaels' retirement, I mean, my favorite superstar ever, you know, going on, you know, walking away. You know, I mean, those are things that, you know, 2010 are going to totally stick with me. You know, seeing the, you know, first ever Money in the Bank pay-per-view was pretty big for me. I love that concept. And, you know, seeing those two matches that were great, having such an amazing pay-per-view, you know, Kane, you know, winning the Money in the Bank and winning the title on the same night, you know, The Miz winning, you know, that briefcase, going on to have such an amazing year. That's why I say, you know, Miz just, you know, really blowing up this year. That it's hard to argue him not being the superstar of the year. You know, was tag team champion, was United States champion, was United States champ and tag team champion at the same time. You know, won the Money in the Bank, won the WWE title, was, you know, a pro on two seasons of NXT that definitely, you know, was an impact and a standout moment for both those seasons, especially season one with him being Daniel Bryan's pro and all the, you know, stuff that pursued there with those guys. I mean, just an amazing year there for you know, Daniel Bryan, you know, getting fired, coming back, you know, at SummerSlam as the mystery guy, you know, on the Team WWE. Yeah, I mean, those are, you know, some pretty big highlights, man. You know, Batista walking away and retiring for now. You know, those are some of the main things that pop in my mind in 2010.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of those are good for me as well. I think, you know, the biggest thing I think for me is going to be Bret Hart coming back. I mean, you know, and, you know, and the Shawn Michaels, you know, the interaction with Shawn and Vince on the very first night. And, you know, even though, you know, the match, you know, the Vince and Bret match was, you know, kind of a huge disaster, still, you know, seeing him back in the ring was exciting. I thought, you know, he looked really good in that SummerSlam match. And, you know, I saw footage of him at Madison Square Garden in a tag match. And I think seeing those things was real fun. And, you know, he was clearly looking better and, you know, and actually, you know, cut some decent promos. I really thought that the angle, the reveal that his leg wasn't broken, in fact, and that he was, you know, faking the injury to trick Vince into the match, I thought that was a really good performance and, you know, and a well done angle. I don't think it was the right angle. I mean, that whole thing probably wasn't the right angle for that storyline, but, you know, at least, you know, how it, you know, how it went about, I think it was still, you know, I think it was still well done, even if it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do. And the CM Punk, a Rey Mysterio feud, I thought was real strong, you know, you know, obviously another big thing this year, of course, it's kind of been forgotten about because it didn't last very long, was the new Monday Night War, you know, TNA, bringing Hogan and Bischoff and, you know, bringing RVD and Jeff Hardy and Ric Flair and trying to make a go of it against WWE. Okay, so we got cut off and we were talking about the sort of, best moments in wrestling and, was talking about the or in 2010 and we're talking about the TNA attempt to relive the Monday Night War and, that's obviously was a, really huge story at the beginning of the year and then it's sort of led to become a massive failure, but it was, interesting, obviously, to see Hogan and Bischoff back and kind of had, I thought that first Impact was, a fun show. They, kind of brought back some of the old WCW guys, kind of, almost like a reunion in a way, and that was, it was kind of fun to see them, at least for one night, and they had, Rob Van Dam had a pretty strong year, and I really think that, Ric Flair, had an incredible year just, in his few matches, particularly the Foley match on Impact toward the end of the year. But I mean, just week to week, as as a, just really having the best promos in wrestling, and some of those performances. I mean, I really think he just did some great stuff and, I think those are probably the things I'm gonna most remember, and I think it was a, I think it was a pretty, there was some definitely some fun concepts. I thought the old school Raw was a, really fun show, and that Roddy Piper promo in particular. I thought, just a cool stuff. I don't, in ring, I don't know if it was. There may have been better years. I mean, there was definitely some strong wrestling, but a lot of it was. I think really Daniel Bryan being in WWE. I mean, I think he really, from an in-ring point of view, might have even had the strongest year in WWE, which is pretty amazing because he was not obviously spent I think about six 7 months in WWE overall. Between his two stints. Without the without the firing, so but he
yeah,
had
let's
you
not
know
forget. I mean, he was on NXT. He hadn't even won a match the entire
right
season.
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know, which was pretty insane. And to see where he's at now, so.
Yeah. I mean, he had one strong match with Jericho in NXT, but yeah, the rest of it was basically after winning the U.S. title from Miz, and then a few defenses that three-way with Miz and Morrison, and the matches with Dolph Ziggler. I think he really in ring had a great 2010, and I think he'll really pick up in 2011, and easily could if they give him a decent push and some time in the ring, I think he could easily be 2011 Wrestler of the Year. So obviously we'll have to see how it goes and all that, but yeah, I mean probably those are the things that I think about when it comes to 2010. And I guess yeah, the last thing I sort of and I alluded to this a little bit is sort of really how the appearances of the legends, with Hogan and Flair and Bret and Piper and Lawler when he had the the angle to set up the TLC match with Miz in the match itself, how the appearances by those guys just were used well in a lot of ways and even kind of overshadowed today's wrestling in some respect. And obviously when you put those guys every week, especially like when TNA did, they do get kind of exposed and it's not as special, but certain moments that they had, I think, were among the best things that happened this year, which is, I guess a testament to experience and talent and whatever. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else that comes to mind, but those would be the things that I that I'll remember.
Yeah, all good stuff. I mean, I will tell you what the ultimate fail of the year is, and that would be The Big Show starring the knucklehead from WWE films. And I actually, I don't know how to put it, but I watched it the other night and was truly, truly disappointed. I really wasn't expecting much as it was, but I was hoping to get at least a few good chuckles out of it, and unfortunately I did not. Horrible movie from beginning to end. You know, on a only plus side I can say is that Big Show definitely put his heart into it. He did his best, and he actually was a, you know, he came off pretty decent in the movie. But overall, I mean, what a horrible flick. So I'm about to watch Legendary this week. I'll let you know how that one goes, how that one turns out. But Knucklehead is a no go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of figured that one. I have a rule that I will never see a WWE Films movie unless I might see the Gorgeous George one if it looks like it's going to be good. But beyond that, they're making a Gorgeous George movie, right?
Oh yeah.
That one. If they make that one and it looks pretty good, then I'll then that one I will consider, but beyond that, yeah, I am against the WWE Films just on principle, because I am that kind of person. So,
I have to say on their behalf, you know, when they first started, and they decided to do some movies, you know, I liked their first batch of flicks. You know, they started off with Kane's See No Evil, which I thought was a very decent, you know, horror movie. Then, you know, I liked, you know, that's when obviously they came out with The Marine, which was a decent little action flick. I thought The Marine was a very big throwback to the 80s kind of blow 'em up, you know, explosion type, you know, action movie. And that was a great one there. Stone Cold's The Condemned, which was another good action movie. You know, and at this point they were doing some, you know, good R-rated, you know, just kind of going for it type movies. And, you know, and then now, you know, they twisted it into more trying to be, you know, obviously going with their PG format, trying to go with more family-oriented films like Legendary and Knucklehead, and that's what I feel is hurting them. It's the direction they're taking with these movies now. They're trying to be too slapstick. They're trying to be too cheesy, and I think they should just stick to, you know, what the original formula was, and that was just a good, solid action movie starring, you know, some of their stars. You know, 12 Rounds is a decent movie. Honestly, it's a very decent action movie. My girlfriend actually likes 12 Rounds, and she doesn't even care for wrestling. you know, I haven't seen The Marine 2 yet. That one, actually, I actually have a copy of sitting in my house, and I've had it for probably 6 months, and so I've not popped it in yet. I am anxious to see it. I hear it's a pretty good little action movie as well. But, you know, so I'm curious to see where they go. I know there's a movie coming out soon with Triple H. I know that they're filming one with Edge right now. I know there's another one, I think, that just wrapped with Randy Orton in it. So, you know, I mean, there's some good ones coming with some good stars in it. So I hope that they can produce some better flicks here in the future and get around this hump that Knucklehead and Legendary put the studios in right now.
Well, thanks for that plug for WWE Films. I'm sure they greatly appreciate it. No, I'm just kidding, obviously. So yeah, well, let's talk about, what you see happening in the, you know, some of these storylines, in WWE going forward. I mean, yeah, you know, they definitely could go back to Kane and Edge, although I'm hoping that they blow that one off on TV and then give, Edge a new opponent. I was kind of hoping that maybe you know, one of the reasons to put Del Rio in that TLC match, even if he wasn't going to win it, was to kind of give him an Edge a natural thing, although it looks like they're still pretty you know, set on at least on doing another Rey Del Rio match. But you know, who knows, maybe they could do a three-way in that and not in, you know, instead of doing a three-way on the for the Raw match. You know, any ideas you kind of see them going toward? They didn't really tip their hand too much on Raw tonight.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I think that's because, like I said earlier, I mean, you know, we got 6 weeks to the Rumble. It's definitely, they got plenty of time to build up. This isn't like a typical pay-per-view schedule where we literally have another one in 2 weeks and they have to throw out half the card right now. You know, I mean, they got definitely enough time to build up for it, and I think that's why they didn't really get too much into it, you know. You know, it's hard to look too much into the future at this point. You know, for the Rumble, I'm hoping they still keep it one-on-one, you know, Morrison and Miz. I think that, you know, I have a bad feeling we're going to get Edge and Kane again, at least one last time, and that'll get them over that hump, and then that'll also free Kane up to get ready for when, you know, Undertaker returns, which will probably be at the Elimination Chamber, and that'll probably, you know, Kane will probably be in that Elimination Chamber for the title, and Kane will or Undertaker will probably cost him the belt, you know, at that pay-per-view, setting up for them at WrestleMania again, you know. Still waiting for Triple H to return, and then obviously, you know, we still got to get Triple H and Sheamus feud out the way. You know, I think we will get Rey and Alberto finally one-on-one, and then that'll kind of end that feud, and then I think we'll definitely get Alberto and Edge. That'll probably, you know, be the world title kind of main event here coming up. You know, curious to see what happens with Daniel Bryan. Obviously, they need to get him into a pretty good feud. They're still kind of lingering with the whole Ted DiBiase thing around him, and you know, they need to hurry up and figure out what they want to do in that direction. You know, and you know, see where we go there for that title, the U.S. title. The Intercontinental title. I'm not sure what direction they're going to go with that one. You know, Dolph Ziggler obviously had a pretty good match with Cena tonight. They're going to fight again on the live SmackDown tomorrow night. You know, but as far as contenders go, once again, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do Kofi again, which I mean, you know, I would like to see Cabal again. I thought Cabal and Dolph had a really good match in Survivor Series. I would like Cabal to take the Intercontinental title, and I'm hoping that that might be the direction that they'll lead to here shortly. Obviously, the tag team department, we don't know what the hell is going on with that. you know, I think they'll let Santino and Cosmo kind of hold on in the meantime. You know, quite possibly, maybe even here down the road, I'm hoping for a reunion at some point in 2011 with Edge and Christian. They kind of, you know, teased it a little bit on the Slammies. You know, I, for one, would love to see that reunion at some point next year. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to where things lead, see who takes off, who fizzles, and you know, who shoots your endeavored, and see where we go here. And you know, Royal Rumble starts that road to WrestleMania, and you know, it'd be nice to see how everything starts shaping up here next month.
Yeah. Well, I think 2011, you know, there's some optimism for some exciting stuff. Yeah, I think an Edge and Christian thing could almost be like, you know, the DX of, you know, 2006. I really think that, I think people really want to see Edge and Christian together, and I think that they really complement each other really well, and I think that, you know, there's some situations you could put them in that would be, you know, interesting and fun, and you could really focus on them, and, you know, they could be, you know, they could be tagged, you know, they could be champions, or they wouldn't even necessarily be champions, but they could be allies, and you could find a real, you know, you could find an interesting story, and, you know, whether Christian can ultimately trust Edge because of, you know, of different circumstances. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear it.
Okay. Sorry, there's some noise there, but that's all right. Anyway, I think there's some direction, you know, there's some interesting directions they can take with that. And speaking of Edge and Christian, we said we were going to talk about, you know, with this being the TLC pay-per-view, we're going to talk about some of our favorite ladder and TLC and maybe some tables matches. And of course, Edge and Christian being well known for being involved in many of them. And you know, when you look at the, you know, the ladder match, you know, the Morrison and Sheamus ladder match and the, you know, the four-way TLC match, where do you think those stack up, you know, among the all-time greats?
Well, like I said, I mean, I feel the Morrison Sheamus ladder match definitely ranks up. It's hard to say there's been so many amazing ladder matches, but I would definitely easily say, just off the top of my head, top 10. Maybe even top five. I would have to, you know, honestly sit and look at a list to really know for sure. But that definitely ranks up there, no doubt. The TLC match last night, I think, would definitely, you know, rank up in, you know, I think there's only been like 10 TLC matches, I think. So obviously it would be a top 10. But you know, I don't think it's a top five one, but you know, it obviously definitely deserves, you know, a spot closer, you know, up to the top. I will tell you, I mean, as far as my you know, favorite TLC matches as a whole, since we're going with the theme of the pay-per-view, the big ones that really pop out to me are going to be obviously the original, which was of course from SummerSlam 2000, Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys versus the Dudley Boys. Just amazing. I mean, well, you can't take anything away from that match. Three of the baddest ass tag teams of all time, really just laying down the line, brand new concept, really just bringing it. And that was an amazing match, which then, of course, led to TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17. Just another, once again, amazing match between three badass teams. And then another forgotten type TLC match. You take those three teams, and then you also add in the team of Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho on SmackDown. They did a four-way TLC match, and that match is incredible. And, you know, it's unfortunate because not a lot of people remember it because it was on SmackDown. And then, obviously, ever since the whole Benoit situation, they don't really talk about that TLC match. And if they do show footage of it, you obviously don't see any of the Benoit stuff in it. But that's an amazing TLC match in its own right. One of my all-time favorites is actually the John Cena and the Edge TLC match from Unforgiven 2006. This one really stands out to me. I'll never forget the ending of this match with John Cena giving the attitude adjustment to Edge off of the top of the ladder and Edge crashing through about four tables back on top of each other. Just an incredible highlight reel moment. You know, what an ending to a pay-per-view. John Cena winning back the WWE title. That's one of my all-time favorite TLC matches. Another great one is Edge and Undertaker from the 2008 One Night Stand pay-per-view, which, of course, is now the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. This Edge and Undertaker one was just incredible. Like I said, I've never, you know, claimed to be the biggest Undertaker fan. I don't care for him all that much. But this match, just he brought it. He took some pretty big bumps that I was pretty impressed with. Edge, of course, the master of it, has been in so many great ones, and this match was definitely the highlight of that pay-per-view. And then my last favorite one that really stands out is from last year's TLC match that I touched upon a little bit earlier. This was for the Unified Tag Team Championship. It was the main event of last year's TLC pay-per-view. It was Chris Jericho and The Big Show taking on D-Generation X. And this match was just a huge moment for myself. You know, all the years being a D-Generation X fan, you know, anyone knows my Twitter name, and it's DX Don Mega, the DX, of course, standing for D-Generation X. You know, love those two guys, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, my favorite two superstars. Been a fan of D-Generation X since day one, and, you know, always hated the fact that they were never tag team champions. You know, through everything that they've done together and all their accolades, that they never, you know, they've both been tag team champions individually with other people, but never together. And on this night, they became the Unified Tag Team Champions. You know, they and it was a badass TLC match and a great way to close out that pay-per-view last year. So, another one of my all-time favorite TLC matches. So, those, as far as TLCs go, in those categories, those are my top TLC matches that definitely pop into mind.
What does the Mega stand for?
Well, that's just my nickname. My nickname's Don Mega.
Oh, okay.
And Don Mega has been a nickname since early 2002, 2001 area, and that just on the side thing here, it's an urban slang term, kind of like, you know, in Italian movies, the mafia boss is the Don, you know, the top guy. And, there's an urban slang that's called Don Mega, which is basically the same type of thing. If you're the Don Mega, you're the echelon, you're the top, you're the boss, you're the man. So, when a guy I worked with back in the day started calling me Don Mega, and it just kind of stuck, and everybody started calling me Don Mega, and it's just continued throughout all these years. So I've always been known as Don Mega, and but unfortunately, whenever I tried to make a username on anything or create a username or an email address, Don Mega has never been available to make. So I threw the DX on in front of it, and I've been, codenamed DX Don Mega for the longest time ever. So the DX, D-Generation X, and then just on top of my nickname, Don Mega.
Huh. Well, there you go. Fun fact.
Fun fact.
You learn a lot of new things. You learn a lot of exciting things in retrospective radio, so it's always good. Well, yeah, I don't really distinguish between the TLC matches and the ladder matches, because I know that, you know, because really, you know, anything that's pretty much legal in a TLC match is legal in a ladder match. But that aside, well, Ric Flair Edge, I think, is one pretty exciting, you know, is one really impressive TLC match that, you know, from 2006 from Raw was just a great performance from Flair. Pretty amazingly, he's still doing it almost 5 years later. But, you know, I definitely agree. I mean, obviously, the TLC matches, you know, the first, you know, Edge and Christian and Hardy's and Dudley's ones I remember. But yeah, the third one with that adds Benoit and Jericho was, you know, a terrific one. Yeah, maybe the best of those. And also was the match that actually put Benoit out for a year, you know, where he suffered his neck injury that put him out for a year, which, you know, is a sad note, of course, and you know, obviously is forgotten about for, you know, the reasons you discussed. The CM Punk Jeff Hardy from SummerSlam 09 match also, that one's a real you know, basically you know, I guess didn't quite cap off that feud because they had a cage match, I believe, that ended it on SmackDown, if I'm not mistaken, or what have you. And actually, you know, just happened, the Miz and Jerry Lawler. I mean, I really thought that match was, I mean, you know, it had actually very few you know, big spots, but you know, I mean, the really, you know, when, you know, Alex, when, you know, Lawler, you know, punched Alex Riley and, you know, and Miz through, you know, and got him through those tables, I mean, those really, you know, meant something because, you know, you weren't seeing that through the entire match. And, you know, it was really just a really great story of, you know, the old man, you know, trying, you know, getting one last shot and, you know, coming so close. And then, you know, even the stuff with Michael Cole at the end of it, I mean, I thought that was a really, really fun match. And, you know, one of my favorites of 2010. So, you know, as far as, you know, regular ladder, I mean, there have obviously been so many great ladder matches, but, you know, obviously, you know, Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels, you know, the first two, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, I just think the storytelling in both those matches is so fantastic, and, you know, not a lot of the, you know, more recent ladder matches can really even top that. You know, I think, you know, the Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit ladder match from Royal Rumble 2001, I mean, is really, you know, probably the best Benoit Jericho match that, you know, at least that I can remember. The Rob Van Dam and Eddie Guerrero from Raw 2002. It's one of my favorite, one of my favorite for both, but I think one of Rob Van Dam's best matches, definitely. You know, and, you know, a few others. I mean, the 2005 SummerSlam match between Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero, you know, for the custody of Dominic, that storyline was a little cheesy, but, you know, it led to,
very cheesy.
But it certainly led to, it was, you know, nice for them to have a great feud in WWE and a lot of matches, and, you know, and that was a pretty fun, you know, capper for that feud. The Edge and Matt Hardy also from that year, you know, where Edge won it and then Matt Hardy had to leave Raw. You know, that was a pretty fun one too. Another one, overlooked one from it was the end of the Rock Mankind feud, their final match, after the night after the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. They had a ladder match on Raw where Rock won the title, which I actually think was the best match they had in that entire feud. So, you know, looking through those would definitely be probably the highlights. You know, I need to see the Jericho Shawn Michaels one from 2008. I always forget to watch that one. That one would
great match.
Sure, yeah, I'm sure that one would be among my favorites. If I saw,
are you talking about the one from No Mercy?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's definitely one of my top. I mean, if we want to speak on ladder matches now, I mean, yeah, that's one of the best ones ever. You know, I love the Shawn Michaels, Triple H. Basically, it wasn't a straight up ladder match, but it was their two out of three falls match that they had at Armageddon, where the last fall was a ladder match, and that was awesome. Of course, your ultimate top one is going to be, like you said, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, of course, WrestleMania 10. That is the first time I ever saw a ladder match, and that match will always stick to me as the best of all time, because you can't beat that storytelling between those two guys. Obviously, the SummerSlam rematch, ladder match was awesome, too. Another great one is Triple H and The Rock from SummerSlam back in the day over the Intercontinental title. That was awesome.
Yes, pretty good.
There's been so many. Any of the ones with Rob Van Dam, Jeff Hardy, any of those ladder matches. The original tag team ladder match between the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian was an awesome ladder match as well. That was the one where they had the bag of money hanging from the ceiling, and they got Terry's managerial services as well with whoever won. That was an awesome ladder match. It was the first ever tag team ladder match. Another tag team one, speaking of tag team ones, that definitely really stands out in my mind is the big Armageddon four-way one that happened several years back with London and Kendrick versus Eminem versus the Hardy Boys and versus William Regal and Doug Taylor.
Dave Taylor,
Yeah, and that match, an amazing, amazing ladder match, and that was, of course, the match where Joey Mercury got his face busted open from the springboard ladder that smacked him in the face by Jeff Hardy, and it literally shattered his entire front of his face open. I'll never forget watching that live on pay-per-view and seeing that ladder seesaw straight into his face and literally just destroy it and blow it out. And all of a sudden you just see blood everywhere in the camera showing the close-up of his face, and it's just, oh my God, what a gruesome moment, and what a hell of a match, though. I mean, the spots those guys took and the things they did was just amazing. So that ladder match, of course, truly, truly stands out in my mind for sure, and I get very nervous on any ladder match ever since that moment there, because I never, just such a crazy spot. I have the history of the ladder match on DVD, and that's a great compilation that I think anybody should definitely pick up and check out if you like ladder matches. It's a 3-disc set, and it's just, all the best ladder matches in WWE history, and that's on there, and a lot of the other ones we talked about, and just an awesome compilation.
Yeah. What about all the great chairs matches that there have been in the past?
I can't even condone the chairs match. I mean, this was something that started last year with the TLC match last year, with the pay-per-view coming out, because they wanted to have, the chairs match, the tables match, and the ladder match. And, I thought it was a joke last year. what the hell is a chairs match? I mean, it's just the concept of it is just stupid, and the fact that they kept it around this year, I'm glad that there was only one. There was supposed to be two with the Rey and Alberto. I'm glad they scrapped that one and ended up only having one in the end of it, because it's just, I don't know, it's kind of stupid, and especially now with the way that the rules are and the way that they are trying to ban all these chair shots to the head and all this stuff. I mean, they can't really do anything too crazy or too awesome with the chair anymore these days. Really, it's pretty pathetic, because all they do is just smack you across the back with it. And I can't take, a 20-minute match of just getting guys getting hit in their back with a chair. It's kind of stupid. I get kind of why they want to do it, to kind of have different stipulations throughout the night. But yeah, they definitely need to keep it to one match, because it doesn't need any more exposure than that.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of kind of silly, but what can you do? Yeah, the only tables match that I really think, that I really thought was anything and particularly special would be the Hardys and Dudleys one at Royal Rumble 2000, which kind of led to was one of the first that led to kind of all these TLC matches eventually. Kind of the first step in that process, and but yeah, none of the other tables matches to me really ever quite matched that. And really, that was only kind of, I mean, even the excitement of that was pretty much just the finish with Jeff Hardy jumping off the stage. So,
Yeah, that definitely tops the list, hands down. That Royal Rumble tables matches is definitely the best tables match that's been out. ECW's done some pretty cool ones. I believe it was a tables match at the original One Night Stand. with Edge and Mick Foley taking on Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk, and that was a pretty badass tables match, which they ended up using the table with barbed wire, and you know, it got pretty extreme at that point because that was the true ECW reunion one night stand, you know, that the fire table and the barbed wire, and they went pretty crazy with it.
I forgot that was a tables match.
You know, and you can't forget too. Another one that truly, truly stands out would be Edge and Mankind, or Edge and McFoley from WrestleMania, with the big spear of Foley through the flaming table for the finish right there. I mean, that was another amazing match. And
was it a tables match, or I thought that was just a hardcore match that they did a table spot in it.
You know, I thought it was a tables match, but you could be right. It could be just a hardcore match. I just remember the ending of being him smashing through the table, and I believe that there was no pinfall or anything after that. I thought that kind of sealed it at that point. But
I have to
double check on that one. But that definitely just kind of stacks in my mind just because of that image of Edge flying through the ring ropes and just spearing, you know, falling straight through the table on fire. That was a hell of a moment.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was... That was a great one, yeah. That's an underrated Foley match, I think. You know, that's not really talked about enough when you're talking about, you know, kind of the best ones that he had. You know, Edge for that matter too. That's a pretty strong one right there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking this up now too. It was WrestleMania 22, not WrestleMania 21. So, Well, you know, I'm getting old. My memory is not.
It's hard, man. I'll tell you. I'll tell you. It gets harder and harder as we see more and more pay-per-views and events to kind of keep a mind of, you know, what year and what event and what number these things started to happen. Man, I'm facing the same issue.
There's so many now. Yeah, it was a hardcore match, and he did pin him after the after going to the flaming table. So.
Okay.
But, you know, it's
honorary mention.
Yeah. Well, you know, it had a famous death table spot that I'm willing to concede. We'll go with that. So yeah, well, that's, I think that pretty much covers that. So, yeah, we, always appreciate you, coming on the show and getting your perspective on the goings on in, WWE, and why don't you let everyone know about future endeavors and where they can find you.
Of course, you know, first of all, I just want to shout out a big contest that we're doing right now. I'm going to drop the rules once again exclusively on WrestleSpective Radio in case you missed the new future endeavors that we did last night after TLC. Basically, here is the gist. We are giving away a prize package to the Royal Rumble. All right, and what this consists of is airfare, a two-night stay in a hotel for Saturday and Sunday, and a ticket to the Royal Rumble event itself in Boston. So this is a huge package right here. I mean, I'm pretty blown away that we can give away something like this on the show. You know, it's awesome. I'm jealous. I wish I could win it. But basically, here is how you can win this awesome package. Pretty simple. The rules are as follows. Number one, you have to follow... you have to be on Twitter, and you got to follow everybody on Twitter. So you got to follow Future Endeavors, follow myself, DX Don Mega, follow Fat Man After Dark, and follow Corey Santiago. Must follow everybody on Twitter. Second rule, you got to be over 18. You got to live in the continental United States. And here's how you do it. All you got to do is just type up an email, and it has to be 30 words. Exactly 30 words. And basically the whole gist of the 30 is because this is for the Royal Rumble. So 30 men over the top Royal Rumble, 30-word, basically, summary of why you should win this trip. So exactly 30-word summary. Email this to fatman@fatmanafterdark.com. All entries will be accepted all the way up to December 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. And then a winner will be picked, and you will be on your way to Boston for the Royal Rumble. So huge contest. Super excited about this. Hooking you guys up. We've done some pretty cool giveaways on the show before, but obviously nothing in this kind of vein. It's a really, really big prize, so a lot of people are really trying to get in on this. So anybody interested, that's how you do it. Of course, check out Future Endeavors every Sunday night, Blog Talk Radio. Of course, you can hear all our episodes, all our Everything, including all my episodes here on Respect Radio, all on our website, www.future-endeavors.com. And just follow us on Twitter. Follow myself, DX.Mega, Future Endeavors. And yeah, every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, I'll bring you a new episode talking about the whole week in wrestling, all the events, MMA news, and the whole night. So that's about that. Join the contest. Check it out. Win a trip to the Rumble.
All right. Well, yeah, everyone, everyone should check that out. And of course, we appreciate you listening. And you can check us out at WrestleSpective.com or WrestleSpective.podbean.com. Either way, I'll get you there. And we got plenty of new shows, and we've got our 2010 Brainbuster Awards that and voting ends on Wednesday tomorrow, probably for most of you that would be listening to this. And you can find all the rules and such in the ballots on there, with lots of links on the website. And you can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/WrestleSpective. Or facebook.com/perspective, or you can and you can also drop us an email if you got anything you want to talk to us about at wrestlespective@gmail.com. Always appreciate hearing feedback from people and everything. So thanks, Don. Appreciate you coming on, and thanks everyone for listening.